Welcome to WebAx, practical web accessibility tips.
Hello and welcome to WebAx, podcast number 55, the WCAG Samurai.
Wow.
Hiya. Hey, Ross.
How's it going?
Good. This is Dennis, your host, and Ross is calling on the line from Panera.
Yep, the wonderful Panera Bread, because this tropical storm that's going through knocked out my power. And
tropical storm through Ann Arbor?
Yeah, you know, it's the hurricane.
Oh, it's the remnants of that hurricane?
Yeah.
Ah.
For us, it was like a tropical storm. I was driving on the freeway, and it was like I could see this wall of black clouds, like probably the worst storm I've ever seen. And yeah, I hopped off, and now I have no power, so.
Well, Panera Bread is good.
It is. I had a bagel and some coffee, and I'm wide awake.
Well, you're two steps ahead of me, then. All right, anyways, so, okay, we're going to go through the usual routine here, I guess, for our podcast. We're going to do some news, and then we'll go to the main segment.
WebAx.
First off, came across an article on Existive. Do you know that site?
Existive.
I think we might have talked about it once. AXISTIVE.com. Axistive. So I guess they're playing on that axe thing like we are. But.
They stole it from you.
Anyways, it's a pretty good site. And they had a little article, JAWS 9.0 with Ajax support. And talking about the possibility for JAWS, the popular screen reader, to maybe in the next version to support Ajax, or at least in some respects, you know, like the back button and stuff.
Yeah, which would be pretty huge.
Yeah, so that's just a whole interesting thing in itself, you know, like Ajax is a huge accessibility issue, so if some of the user agents were able to handle Ajax better, I mean, I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah, it might create a situation where people are more likely to use Ajax now that they don't have to worry about accessibility as much. But
yeah, what if you don't have the special user agent that can handle Ajax, you know? I mean, JAWS costs, like $1,000?
Yeah, it's not cheap.
Yeah. So anyways, next announcement, Spoken Text. Just want to give a shout-out to Mark at SpokenText.net. And he's been on the show a couple times. He is the founder of an online application that converts different formats of text to audio, which is really cool. And he's made some improvements on the application, including they're in beta phase for testing the Firefox add-on, Firefox plugin for it that I tested for him. It's pretty cool.
So, very cool.
Yeah, if you want to test it for them, just send an email to info@spokentext.net. And you could now share recordings on the site with other folks. And they're looking for donations to continue the project. So they're taking PayPal donations. So go ahead and check that out.
Definitely. And then I stumbled across an article talking about why your employer should care about web accessibility. I think that's a good one. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of developers out there who are always battling with why you should care. And I know even with my company, I come across clients that don't like the alt text because it displays a box when you put your mouse over an image in Internet Explorer or something crazy like
say,
that.
Well, that's the problem with your browser then.
Yeah.
Dude.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that in the arsenal, I guess, as far as responses, how you can convince people.
Totally. It's always a good idea to review those points, keep them fresh in your mind so you could, so you don't think about it like 6 hours later when you're eating dinner that night and you're like, oh,
yeah.
Crap, I should have said this.
That's the perfect response.
Okay, so off to our main segment about the WCAG Samurai.
So, yes, what is the WCAG Samurai? It sounds dangerous.
They're an independent group of developers convened in 2006.
And who's the head ninja?
Joe Clark.
Oh, okay. I think a lot of people know Joe Clark now. He's going to be pretty well known.
Yep. And if you're not familiar, there'll be a link to his site on the WebEx post for this podcast.
Yep. And Dennis might get a chance to meet him. I guess he's going to Event Apart San Francisco, which, Dennis, you plan to attend?
Yeah. I think it's October 3rd and 4th. The 4th or 5th, something like that.
Yeah.
So that should be very cool. And I'll definitely have to bring my MP3 recorder, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm going to try and get out there, too. Maybe we can get some WebEx drops from him.
I'm going to be nervous talking to him.
Yeah, I know. He seems like an intense guy.
We'll see what he's like in person. You never know. Maybe he's more... less intense, but probably not. So, what is the WCAG Samurai all about? Basically, WCAG 1.0, or the W3C's Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, most of you know, have been out since, 1999, right?
Yeah, it's been a while.
So, yeah, it's been forever, especially, in web years. WCAG 2.0... still under revision.
Yep.
And who knows when that's coming out. They're saying now by the end of the year, but we'll see. It's been delayed over and over. So.
Yeah. And the whole Samurai started when the first working draft of WCAG 2.0 came out, and everybody, especially Joe Clark, thought that it was just going in the wrong direction. So this was his solution, is that rather than try and start from ground up, why not just improve what we already have?
Yeah, so basically, it's a draft of guidelines, and it's basically a temporary fix for WCAG 1.0. So it, he says he doesn't want to replace WCAG 2.0, but
yeah. Essentially, he's using it as an add-on. He always refers to it in the document as you're being compliant with WCAG plus Samurai. So it's almost its like own set of additions.
Yeah, that seems kind of be like, maybe that's a new spec that, I would kind of agree with. WCAG 1.0 plus Samurai. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Sounds cool.
So, yeah. So basically, he rewrites WCAG 1.0, and without further ado, maybe we should just jump right into it. But the links for the Samurai, of course, will be posted on this blog post also.
Yep.
But let's start off by giving a quick going through the summary. I grabbed a few points out of there. He basically saying yes to priorities 1 and 2 and no to priority 3. With a few small exceptions, and we'll go over that in a little while about the priority 3.
Yeah, it's interesting. He says that some of priority 3 you should not comply to.
Yeah, and he says most of them are just like, kind of impossible or ridiculous to try to adhere to. And some I agree with.
Yeah. So.
And yeah, so I'll just give a few more general points about it before we jump in one by one, but just to give you an idea of what it's about, tables for layout and frames are banned.
About time.
Goodbye to NoScript.
Also very good.
Encouraging DOM scripting. Goodbye to 20th century relics like ASCII art.
Which is pretty cool in its own right, but no place on the web.
And then a ban on most PDFs. And hardcore accessibility people, you know, agree that PDFs should only be used as, not to use PDFs as additional content, but just to complement, you know, with the content that's already on the web.
Yeah, kind of a last resort. There is no better way to display the content.
Yeah. And then the Samurai are very serious about multimedia, and they talk more extensively about audio and video guidelines. And an interesting point that we could talk to talk about in a whole other podcast in itself is that there's no new guidelines for cognitive disabilities.
Yeah, he pretty much says that WCAG 1 and 2 are both inadequate, but they didn't want to undergo...
They didn't want to take on that.
Yeah. All they said is they agree with, speak in the plainest way possible.
Right. The simplest language, appropriate to the content, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so let's jump right into the guidelines themselves.
Yep.
There's 12, although I think number 8 was removed or something screwy.
Oh, really? I guess I didn't.
But we'll find out in a minute.
Yeah.
All right.
Looking through. So the first one is provide equivalent alternatives to auditory and visual content. And he kind of summarizes that some of the central errors in WCAG 1 is that how should you do your alternate content? You know, like some people do, this is an image of an arrow that is a link to a home page. He says that that's really not what you should be doing, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, he, there's, the guidelines are definitely just more practical.
Yeah.
And this one, guideline number 1 is the biggest. It's kind of like, Guideline 1.1.
Yeah.
From WCAG 1.0. But I thought the most important thing that he says in here is you must be able to substitute the text equivalent for the original item. So if your text equivalent is for an image or, you know, an auditory element or something, that it should be equivalent to a substitute, so it's equal. I just kind of like the way he phrased that.
Yeah, I mean, overall, the whole document reads better. I mean, it's easier to comprehend.
Yeah.
And even
this point
through this... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Ross.
he does even go into some more technical things, too, which I think is helpful. Like, in regards to providing equivalent alternatives, he says that you can use positioning to position equivalent content off the page so that if you're reading it in a screen reader, you can have maybe a text block positioned off the page where if you don't have Flash, you can see it then. So it's kind of a more modern approach.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I noticed, for charts and diagrams, he has 3 points explaining just about those, you know, and, extensively detailed charts or diagrams may be described using the long description or... the long description attribute, or in ordinary text, which is obviously a good idea, but they don't really, you know, in WCAG 1.0, they don't talk about that in detail.
No, they don't. It's kind of missing.
But there's a lot of points in sounds and video also. He makes a point that sounds and video may not play without the user activation.
Which is great.
Yeah, I agree with that also.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do you stumble upon a Flash site that it's like right away, hear some annoying music right in your ears?
MySpace.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, so go to the wcagsamurai.org and you can read more about that one, because that one's a pretty long guideline.
Yeah, there's a lot of good information, and overall, I mean, the whole thing is very easy to comprehend. I mean, that's what I like about it. It's a lot less vague, you know.
Right.
Lesson.
So, let's go on to guideline 2. Don't rely on color alone.
Which this, of course, is discussed in WCAG 1, but I guess he kind of, you know, clarifies things and looks like he wants to move away from just technical issues like people using non-visual displays or monochrome displays, but also, you know, colorblindness and learning deficiencies.
That's right. Yeah, that one's pretty straightforward. Guideline 3, use markup and style sheets and do so properly. So this is obviously a good one.
Yeah, definitely. So it's good to see that you should use CSS. And I think this is, again, this is moving towards a more modern approach.
Yeah, and separating your style from content. But I think two big things that he's in the subheadings here under this category is he's really big on compliance and to have, you know, valid code and to have semantic code, which is also very, very important for accessibility, not only to have valid code, but to have semantic code, too.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And that's another thing that it's good to see that getting worked into the accessibility guidelines. A lot of people talk about it.
Well, yeah, that's awesome because a lot of people say, oh, my page is like, you know, it's XHTML 1.0 strict and like, okay, it's just a bunch of divs.
Yeah.
You
know. Exactly.
So, yeah.
So there's more to it than just, I mean, validating is important, but there's more to it than just that. And one thing I saw that was interesting is that he says it's okay to use pixels or text units. Which, I guess I can kind of see, because it's not really a problem with pixels, it's a problem with Internet Explorer, as far as pixels not being able to be resized.
Yeah, I'm kind of in between on that one, because I totally agree that, on the one hand, I totally agree with him that, you know, it's the problem of the user agent, you know,
and that
if you're programming, you're coding your site correctly, then, you know, it's up to the user agent to interpret it correctly. But on the other side of the coin, you know, I mean, I guess I just can't get it through my head that if you're trying to use relative sizing, why would you use pixel when that pixels aren't relative, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing...
That just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and it seems like the use of pixels is becoming more popular because people are kind of now into this whole setting a baseline for type, which makes it more readable, like calculating out how type should be spaced and stuff like that, which requires pixels. But because it can't be resized in Internet Explorer, it creates an issue.
Right. And then people are adding those, you know, increase and decrease text size buttons on their site, which is pretty pitiful if you ask me, and that's a related issue that I really agree with Joe Clark on, is, you know, your browser should be doing that, and your browser should easily, you know, allow the user to do that, because that's like one of the, you know, basic simple things, functionalities of a browser. So
yeah, I mean, it should be function of the browser, not of the website itself.
Exactly. It's like your website doesn't, you know, contain like, some contain bookmarking links, but
yeah, but it shouldn't.
You get my point.
Yeah, I mean, you really don't need a bookmarking link or a open new tab link, you know.
Yeah, you shouldn't be building in. Thank you. You shouldn't be building in these browser functionalities into your site. That's not the idea.
Yeah, and it's kind of like recreating a whole new interface of the browser, which has accessibility issues of itself. So,
all right, well, let's move on. Guideline 5, create tables that transform gracefully. Do not use. It's only a short 2-bullet one. Do not use tables for layout. Then he talks about the summary and caption and abbreviation, which he talks about in guideline priority 3, and we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Guideline 6, ensure that pages featuring new technologies transform gracefully.
And I thought this was interesting. He says, do not provide alternative presentations or alternative pages, because that was a big thing with WCAG 1, as they say. You can have an alternative page.
Yeah, he says, if all else fails.
Yeah, exactly. As long as it's up to date, the alternative page is okay. And he's saying, nope. Make your pages themselves accessible.
Right. Guideline 7, ensure user control of time-sensitive content changes.
No flickering, flashing, blinking GeoCities-type pages.
Right. No client-side redirecting and... let's see. No... Okay. Blink and marquee may not be used, even in a custom XHTML document type. I'll agree with that one.
Yeah, it's a tough one, but I guess... I think he's barely right on this one.
Guideline 9, design for... I was going to go back and say... about Guideline 6, that was cool that he says that. Ensure that pages featuring new technologies transform gracefully. He doesn't really go into detail on that one. It's just one line, but it's... Basically what that means to me is progressive enhancement.
Yeah, definitely. And it almost seems like there's something that they're working on there that's just not released yet, because he says see checkpoint 6.5, but there is no point to this point, so.
Yeah, and it also does say that, maybe we should mention this before, but the WCAG Samurai is still, being developed. It's not the final version.
Yeah.
But I suppose maybe it'll never be a final version. So.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it should always be updated as time and technology changes.
Yeah. So, there is no Guideline 8. I'm not sure what happened to that.
Yeah, who knows?
Guideline 9, design for device independence.
Which is basically server-side image maps and don't create a tab index.
Yeah, that's a good one. And, because in WCAG 1.0, they say you should use a tab index, but that's kind of outdated.
Yeah.
Because the modern way of coding, the content in your page should flow in the correct order anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we've talked about that before. But anyways, Guideline 10, use interim solutions. Let's see. Do not cause pop-ups or other windows to appear, and do not change the current window without informing the user.
Another big one is do not add default placeholding characters
in
meta box and text areas.
Yeah, that's another issue I've seen come up before. That was a guideline in WCAG 1.0, which is totally outdated now.
Yeah.
If you got a text input box... WCAG 1.0 says to I don't know why, it says to put in, placeholding characters in that box.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that's, like, something so you can show an example for cognitive reasons or what, but, yeah, very strange.
Yeah, but the modern acceptance, the modern rule is, not to do
exactly.
That. Exactly. let's see. All right. There's not too much more to that one. Let's go to Guideline 11. Use W3C technologies and guidelines.
This one's mostly about PDF documents. I mean, he's got 13 points about when you can use a PDF document. So, I mean, he talks about make sure that they're, if you have to use them, they're footnoted, endnoted, side noted, since there's no way to mark up any of them.
This is an interesting one. Deprecated features, including deprecated elements and attributes, may be used if no reasonable alternative exists.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I don't know if it's in this section or something coming up. There's at some point where he says that if the only reason your page doesn't validate is because you're using the embed tag, that's okay. It does technically, according to him, validate.
According to him. Okay. And the last guideline, 12, provide context and orientation information. Basically about the general information about the web page or website itself.
An interesting thing here is he says do not provide a sitemap unless the site cannot be understood or navigated without it, which I don't quite understand the reasoning for.
Yeah, that's kind of strange.
Yeah, I mean, I know people who...
If you get a really big site, you're going to want a sitemap.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who rely on search or sitemap, so...
Yeah, I wouldn't really agree with that one either.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there is some reasoning behind it. But, yeah, it's just face value. I don't quite get it.
Let's see. Do not place distinguishing information at the beginning of headings, paragraphs, lists, etc., unless document semantics warranted.
I don't quite understand that one.
Me neither. I don't know why it just doesn't say, you know, use headers and use them appropriately.
Yeah.
Or, you know, use headings and paragraphs and other semantic items appropriately. But distinguishing information at the beginning. If anyone out there has an idea of what that means exactly.
Or Joe, if you're hear this, send an email.
Yeah, or Joe, if you're listening. Do not use frames, do not use ASCII art. So that covers the basics of the WCAG Samurai.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's really good. I mean, as far as what's available now, WCAG 2 is still just a working draft. I think it's a nice update to WCAG 1. It's only about 9 pages, and it all makes sense, so.
Yeah, I agree. It's very good, and, you know, out of all that, I think, you know, there was maybe just a couple things that we, you know, just... you know, disagreed on, but, I mean, all in all, it's excellent.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I'm going to start referring to this for future pages.
Yeah. That's an interesting idea. We should start saying, WCAG plus Samurai. WCAG 1 plus Samurai.
Compliance, yes.
Yeah. So everybody do that.
Yeah, I mean, I say, figure why not? If you think it's good and you think you want to promote this method of accessibility, then let people know.
Okay, so one other main item for the WCAG Samurai is in the intro, towards the bottom, they have priority 3 guidelines to ignore, which I thought was... definitely important enough to go over in this podcast. So in WCAG 1.0, you know, there's priority 1, priority 2, priority 1 being the most basic, priority 2 being the medium, and priority 3 being the more complicated things. And for like fully accessible web page. And Joe Clark and company is saying that most of the priority 3 guidelines are not valid and you can just ignore
them. A lot of them don't apply anymore or outdated.
Yeah. So let's just go a few of them and maybe we could disagree or agree. And 4.2, you don't have to expand abbreviations and acronyms unless a person with a disability cannot understand the document without the expansion.
I think
what is it? Is you saying like something like TV?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to give a abbreviation tag that says television for something like TV.
Yeah. I think.
I mean, he's probably saying a little more than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think that's right. You just have to be careful because there are situations where if you're expanding every single abbreviation, I could see it making it harder to understand. Like. People know TV as TV. People know CBS as CBS. I mean, it doesn't makes sense to expand every single one, National Broadcasting Center, whatever, you know.
Let's see.
I thought this was an interesting one. Don't provide your own keyboard shortcuts. This is a job for browser adaptive technology. So is he saying that don't use access keys?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that one. Well, it's a toss-up.
Yeah, I mean, it might be the role of the browser, but if you can make it easier for someone to navigate, I can see the value, at least at this point.
Yeah, I could still see some value in doing that. I have it on my Check Engine USA website. I mean, I think I'm not sure if this is his point, but a big point with that is just which keys to use.
Yeah, which has always kind of been a debate.
Because so many different applications use these, you know, special keys or regular keys or commands, you know, key commands to do different things, and it's just... So I find that just the numbers, you know, 0 through 9 are the easiest.
Yeah.
If you do them. But the previous point, well, I guess we talked about that before. Do not attempt to create your own tab order. So don't use the tab index, which I think we both said we agree with. Do not use placeholder text in forms, which we already talked about.
Not all sites or pages require nav bars. He says ignore that. That's 13.5.
Yeah, I don't have 1.0 in front of me. But I'm guessing that 13.5 says you have to have a navigation. Something referring to the fact that you have to have navigation on every page.
Yeah.
Multiple kinds. Oh yeah, here's a good one. 13.7. You don't have to provide multiple kinds of search. Not an accessibility issue. Ignore.
Which I think that's true.
I think that's true too. That's more of a usability issue.
Yeah, I mean, definitely usability.
And one basic search is, I mean,
as long as it's an adequate search.
If you have a good search.
I think that's the key. Is that you can't have some crappy search that doesn't work. But.
See. Oh yeah, this was a funny one. 14.2. That's the one that talks about, you know, using illustrations and other things to kind of add to your content or help, you know, the user understand your content. And he says, use the content you wish to use. You're not required to illustrate documents. Blah blah blah.
Which would then require text equivalent. Yeah, well, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And, of course, the really good one, Guideline 10.3, CSS layouts are more than adequately supported, and you may not use tables for layout.
Good point. And Guideline 5.5, this is the one I wanted to get to earlier. The summary attribute by specification cannot be manifested visually. HTML provides numerous ways of clarifying the purpose of tables, caption, headers, and the same thing can also be done by explaining a table in plain text. When you say you must ignore this guideline, we mean you must ignore the requirement to use summary. So I think that was really good. He's saying using the summary attribute in a table tag is not required.
Yeah, you can use it if needed, but you should be able to make a perfectly understandable table without it.
Right, like you could explain, if you have a complicated data table, you could explain what it's all about in the paragraph above it. It doesn't have to be in a summary attribute, because that does the same thing. Or if you have a good caption and the data table is not that complicated, then you probably don't need a summary attribute. Yes. So, So they say you must ignore the requirement to use summary. So I thought that was very good.
Me too.
Okay. Well, I think that pretty much covers it.
So overall, I think it's really good. I think you should check it out. And, I mean, I'm going to start using it. So hopefully other people feel that it's a worthy document as well, and do the same.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if WCAG 2.0 gets delayed again. If so, if it does, I would really like to see the WCAG Samurai being used much, yeah, much more. And yeah, I'll start referring to it more myself, like when I can. Okay, so yeah, hopefully there's some questions and comments out there about this, because it's a pretty big deal, I think. So you know, send us an email, webaxe@gmail.com, webaxe@gmail.com, and we'll see you next time.
Cheers.
The WebAxe blog and podcast is located at webaxe.blogspot.com, webaxe.blogspot.com. Email webaxe@gmail.com, webaxe@gmail.com. To leave a voice message, call 206-203-0585. WebAxe is sponsored by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls. www.checkengineusa.com.